Hello everyone, welcome along to episode 8 of the Director's Box podcast. Once again, it's Kev and Craig coming at you. Craig, how are you? Hope you had a good Easter weekend, mate.
Yeah, very nice Easter. Thank you, Kevin. And you?
Yeah, not too bad, football aside. Obviously not the result I wanted for Luton, but I watched so much football over the weekend, Craig, and I really can't wait to chat about it all with you. Two brilliant days of action in the EFL. That huge title clash on Sunday in the Premier League. We're going to cover it all on this podcast. And then we're going to look ahead at what's coming up this weekend, particularly in Scotland, where we might, I say might, see the title decided as the top two collide. How does that sound, mate?
Sounds like a great podcast. Looking forward to it.
Let's get going then. So we will start off with the Premier League title match between Man City and Arsenal. We'll then cover the EFL. We'll cover Championship and League Two on this episode because we are recording on Tuesday and there's that huge top of the table clash in League One. So we'll reflect on that in next week's podcast. We'll then have a little look at the Plymouth manager situation. They sacked their manager. We'll discuss that briefly. We'll talk about the weirds going on in the Premier League with tickets and concession prices and being phased out. We don't like that. We'll point that out and talk about that. And as I say, we'll finish off with the Old Firm Derby, which takes place Sunday, and it's a huge one. But before that takes place, Craig, we've got the top of the table in the Premier League to look back at. Obviously, Liverpool played Brighton early on Sunday, but the main game, or at least it was billed to be the main game, was Manchester City against Arsenal. I'm guessing someone involved in football, and particularly coaching and analysis and everything else, will have enjoyed that Man City-Arsenal game an awful lot more than the purest supporter, because ultimately, there was a lot of cancelling each other out about it.
Yeah, I found it a really fascinating tactical battle, actually, between Arteta and Guardiola. And I like the way Arteta set his team up. It was almost set up not to concede, certainly early on and throughout the first half, actually, where they sort of went in mid to a low block, tried to negate the space centrally from Manchester City and sort of prevented, you know, balls being played between lines and into central areas and forced them into wide areas as a consequence. So it wasn't too dissimilar, actually, to the way that Manchester United set up against Manchester City in their recent derby game. And I think it worked well for Arsenal, actually, because when you set up like that, first of all, you reduce the spaces between the units, so between the back four, the midfield and the forward line. And of course, City thrive on playing through teams and capitalising on the space that they create. So by doing so, I thought Arsenal negated that very, very well. And when they did get into dangerous areas, you know, Arsenal players were prepared, obviously, to put their bodies on the line and get blocks off. And and just generally keep Manchester City at bay throughout that first half, really. There were a couple of chances, obviously. But I thought that the two best chances in the first half actually fell to Jesus, you know. One, I think, he took on his left foot. I think it was a volley that dropped to his left foot, which was a poor effort by his standards. Another one then was a right-footed effort, which he put wide of the right post. So so they seem to get that right. Went in 0-0, obviously, at half-time. And in the second half then, a little bit more adventurous. They looked to press. And, of course, the beauty of playing like a mid-block or a low block is that you do conserve energy. You're not pressing, so you're not running longer distances and then having to recover longer distances as well. So you're trying to keep the game in front of you as much as possible. And you might be making, you know, 10, 12-yard runs, but they're not as dynamic or as tiring, obviously, as when you're pressing, potentially. So as a consequence of that, Manchester City set up as they normally do, second half. Arsenal pressed them from the front, which was a complete reverse tactic to the first half. And they got some success from that. When they did go into a mid-block, then they were quite effective on the counter-attack as well. So, yeah, really interesting to see how the two coaches said about it. I mean, Pep obviously just stuck to his normal game plan, as you would at home. And Arteta, in the way he set up with that defence strategy in the first half and then second half, allowed his players to play more on the front foot, if you like. Yeah, and try to get the win with the counter-attacking aspect.
Yeah, I was really surprised with the way that Pep kind of lined up to begin with. Not so much his four centre backs, obviously John Stones, Kyle Walker, they were both injured. We wondered if they would be after the England performance the week before. But more in attacking areas, I kind of thought that the one way that you can get at this Arsenal side is with a bit of pace. Yet he left Jeremy Doku on the bench until about 60, 65 minutes. And actually, when he came on, he stretched the pitch a little bit more than what had gone before it. I kind of thought, given that Kiryor and Ben White, not so much Ben White, he's fairly quick, but Kiryor certainly not the quickest. And when Doku was on the pitch, he kind of had the better of him enough. They just couldn't get, funnily enough, for once, Man City just couldn't get enough men around Doku to kind of create something. And actually, it was Grealish on the other side that was kind of creating the little bits that City did create in the game. I thought Arsenal shackled them pretty well. And, well, I hope they're that defensive on Wednesday night, I've got to be honest.
Who are they playing on Wednesday night, Kev?
Yeah, they're at home to Luton on Wednesday. I suspect that Luton won't be able to punch as many holes into them as Man City possibly tried to.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I mean, I think Doku has been effective for Manchester City in certain games this season. And he showed that when he came on, didn't he? He managed to get in behind a few times. And typically, Man City, they like to attack those half spaces, the space just inside the 18-yard box. And then from that, we mentioned in the previous episode that they do like the cutback crosses, you know, or standing up the far post for Haaland to attack. I'm surprised he did leave it that long. But then again, when you've got faith in the players that you've selected from the start, then you can probably see why Pep Guardiola didn't do some until sort of midway through the second half, if you like. I thought Grealish was effective at times. I'd like to see him attack his fullback a bit more than he did, to be honest with you. And Doku certainly got some success down that one side. And you just wonder if maybe he'd been introduced, or they'd both been introduced at the half-time stage, whether or not they might have undone Arsenal's defence and got themselves all 3 points.
Yeah, I must admit, that's what I was expecting at half-time, Doku to come on either side, really, just to open it up a little bit for the Fodens and the De Bruyners. And at the time, Bernardo Silva was out wide on the other side, wasn't he? It seemed like one of those games where both teams were not necessarily happy with the draw, but the draw wasn't the worst result. But they would much rather have drawn than lose, kind of thing. It just had that feel about it, didn't it?
It did to a degree, especially when you think how Arsenal set up. But then when you consider then how Arsenal did press in the second half, clearly, you know, you would have thought that both teams wanted to go away with the 3 points, clearly. But as we said, again, in a previous episode, sometimes, you know, respect the draw, respect the point. And if you don't lose, then obviously, you know, the gap either hasn't been decreased or hasn't increased, depending on where you're sitting in the table. Interesting to hear Jurgen Klopp say, when he was asked on his preferred outcome, preferred result from this particular game, was that he wanted both teams to lose. Obviously that was never going to happen. But I think a nil-nil draw probably suits Liverpool best, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It'll be interesting to see how City cope to that. Obviously, you spoke about Liverpool there. Earlier in the day, they beat Brighton. They went behind very early. Danny Welbeck, really, really good strike into the top corner. Mo Salah scored against Brighton, as he seemingly always does. And then, that came through the winner, didn't it? A lovely, lovely pass from Alexis McAllister, who I'm sure that will have annoyed the Brighton fans even more, considering he's a former Brighton player. What did you make of that game? That was the exact opposite, wasn't it? Whereas two sides cancelled each other out in the second game of the day, it was just wide open attack against attack in the first game of the day. And Liverpool most likely always going to come out on top at Anfield in a game like that.
Yeah, as you said, two attacking teams who really went for it, didn't they? And great strike by Welbeck to go 1-0 up for Brighton. And then there was that obviously equalised, where he gambled on a through ball, if you like, and managed to get a final touch on that to find the roof of the net. Good finish. Yeah, and then a really well-worked goal then, involving McAllister finding Salah, as you say, inside the 18, and a typically cool finish by Salah. But yeah, wide open game, and yeah, you've always got to fancy Liverpool in that type of scenario, haven't you, really? You know, with their attacking threat particularly. Although Bournemouth again, Brighton again, you know, played particularly well, and their brand of football is certainly catching the eye, isn't it? And it'd be interesting to see where their coach ends up next season, whether he stays at Brighton or he's recruited elsewhere.
Possibly at the venue that he coached at on Sunday, if growing reports are to be believed. So we've got Liverpool ahead of Manchester. Sorry, Liverpool ahead of Arsenal, 2 points ahead of Arsenal, with Manchester City another point further behind. There are midweek games to go, so by the time that you listen to this podcast, that might have changed a little bit, because Arsenal and Man City play on the Wednesday. We'll have this out before Liverpool play Sheffield United on the Thursday. I would be staggered if Sheffield United get anything at Anfield, though, so I think we can add 3 points to the Liverpool tally. So it's up to Arsenal to beat Luton and Manchester City to beat Aston Villa to keep tabs with it. Liverpool in pole position for the title for you now, Craig, or are we still not giving up hope with the other two?
I don't think you can, Kevin, because there's still, you know, so many games to play yet. You know, I'm sure it's going to take twists and turns, although you would think that obviously the top three aren't going to drop many points, are they, between now and the end of the season. Obviously, Liverpool are in pole position, you know, being 2 points clear at the moment. So, as a consequence of that, then you do fancy Liverpool. But, you know, never write off Manchester City for obvious reasons. Degree of and success in the Premier League. And of course, Arsenal, you know, proven themselves this season particularly well. I think they've really matured as a team. And that was evident in the performance at the weekend against Manchester City.
It really was. Yeah, fascinating EPL title race. And it's going to take plenty of twists and turns, and may even take a twist and turn at the weekend. It is Manchester United against Liverpool. It was only 3 weeks ago, sorry, 2 weeks ago, actually, that Manchester United upset Liverpool in the Cup. So there are plenty of dynamics on that. And there's still a Tottenham Arsenal game to come this season as well. And of course, Manchester City got Aston Villa Wednesday night. Not the easiest game. We'll keep tabs with the Premier League title race as it happens throughout the remainder of the season here on the Director's Box podcast. But it's not just the Premier League where there is a compelling title race going on, Craig. The Championship is absolutely brilliant. I've got to be honest, this is probably my favourite league in world football, the Championship, especially now Luton aren't in it. But at the top of the table, two brilliant days of football over Easter. On Good Friday, Leicester City continued to make hard work of their promotion challenge. They lost at Bristol City. And then later in the day, Ipswich ground out a win, really. I think you'd have to say against Blackburn. They were very, very fortunate that their goalkeeper got away with an absolute howler in the second half of that game. And then Leeds United slipped up at Watford, needing a very, very late equaliser themselves to rescue a point in that one. Then we went into Easter Monday. I must admit, I really feared for Leicester against Norwich, especially when Norwich took the lead. Norwich took the lead with that exact same corner that Manchester City took the lead against Liverpool with a few weeks ago. But credit to Leicester, they bounced back. They won that 3-1. And then it was over to Ipswich and Southampton, who played out one of the games of the season. Absolute brilliant game. Southampton went 2-1 ahead after Ipswich took the lead early on, only for Ipswich to do what they do. Score in the last few minutes, and then they score an injury time winner, 97th minute winner. Who knows how important that Jeremy Sarmiento goal is going to be when all is said and done. And that put the pressure on Leeds at the time. They were really, really sort of trailing the other two. They were at home to Hull City. Dangerous looking game, it looked like. But credit to Leeds. They were nowhere near their best, but they got the job done. They won 3-1 in the end, Daniel James scoring in injury time when Hull had sent their goalkeeper up to try and get a point. Left the goal exposed. Daniel James scored from the halfway line, rolled it in. And we're now heading into the next games this weekend with Ipswich top on 87 and looking really, really good, I have to say. Leeds second on 86. Both have played 40 games. And we've got Leicester third on 85, 2 points off top spot, but they've got that game in hand, albeit that game in hand comes in a couple of weeks' time at home to Southampton, who I think we can now rule out of the sort of title and potentially automatic promotion hunt after they lost to Ipswich, Craig, but still having a fine season themselves.
Yeah, sure. Where do you start? Let's start with Southampton then, as that was the last one that you mentioned. So I think with Southampton, obviously, you know, must have been, you know, absolutely so disappointed after losing the game at Ipswich so late on, 97th minute, as you said. And what a game that was. Phenomenal, end-to-end again. And both, you know, two good teams, and both created lots of chances as well. And Ipswich coming really, really late in that one. And, you know, and full value, to be honest with you, for their victory as well. You know, so they've got three wins on the bounce now in the last three. So they're flying high, obviously, top of the table. 87 points, as you said, after 40 games. Leeds, 86 points after 40 games. Unless they're 85 with a game in hand on the top two. It's incredible, isn't it, really? We were talking not that long ago, it seems, that Leicester had a 12-point lead at the top of the Championship. And now that's turned round into a 2-point deficit off the top team. And full credit to Ipswich and Leeds, who have both gone on some great runs recently. Southampton, I don't know, you know, it's on 74 points, so they're 8 points off second place, albeit with two games in hand. And again, if they were to win those two games, that give them 6 points, that takes them to 80 points. You know, I still feel that's probably too much still, because I can't see Leeds, Ipswich dropping many points between now and the end of the season, to be honest with you, not the form they're in currently anyway. So all bodes well to the fascinating finish, certainly in the top two positions. Yes, Leicester have had a blip, but they turned the corner, as you said, against Norwich with that 3-1 win. Are they going to come good? Are they going to have a good now from now to the end of the season for the last, you know, seven games for them? But I think it's going to really, you know, take some doing to upset and to topple Ipswich and Leeds off those top two places, if I'm honest. Really impressed with Ipswich, the way they've gone about their business, and full credit to them, topping the table purely on merit, without a shadow of a doubt there. Watched the Leeds game, or parts of the Leeds game. It was 1-1, it was tight, wasn't it? And then, as you said, you know, they went 2-1 up. And then great to see Dan James actually score sheet, obviously after his disappointment with the penalty miss for Wales in the playoffs. And as a consequence, you know, he took his goal particularly well. Goalkeeper came up for the corner, ball got cleared. Dan James took a big first touch over the halfway line and then hit it on the run, actually, probably from about 45 yards on the diagonal into the empty net. And very reminiscent for me for a goal that Darren Prattley scored for Swansea, actually, against Nottingham Forest in the playoff semi-final at the Liberty Stadium. Similar scenario. Ball dropped to him, took a couple of touches and then hit the ball from slightly further out, actually. It was probably halfway. But, so I'm pleased for Dan James that he got on the score sheet. And, and hopefully now he's back on top form. Ready for the run-in, which is going to be absolutely fascinating, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely can't wait for this Championship run-in. I noticed there was a bit of sort of internal beef, wasn't there, over who was going to take the penalty for that second one, but I noticed Dan James was nowhere to be seen. He was not putting himself in that position after the other night for Wales, was he? And quite rightly so. And Somerville took the ball off of Joel Pirro, didn't he? And mind you, if he'd missed that, core, that would have had some repercussions, wouldn't it? But he didn't. He slid it straight down the middle and sent Leeds on their way. At this stage of the season, Craig, I heard all along, you know, there was a lot of talk during that Leeds game from the commentary over in England that Leeds weren't at their best or anything like that. Are we now at the stage now where looking good is second nature to just getting the result? However you get it, just get that result and just get over the line, get your points on the board.
I think it's always nice to win games playing attractive football, Kevin, isn't it? You know, and not only for the, you know, for the fans, but, you know, certainly for the coaching staff and for the players as well. But ultimately, it is, isn't it? It's all about 3 points, you know. And if you've got to win ugly, then win ugly. Just get the points on the board, and doesn't matter how they come, really, to finish the game with 3 points in the bag. You know, even if you're leaving it as late as Ipswich did, you know, those 3 points are going to be invaluable, and so it proved, you know, to take Ipswich back to the top.
Yeah, particularly in these sort of days like Easter Monday, where they all play at different times, you know, they all rebound to each other's results and things like that. And that's what impressed me so much about Leeds, actually. Yes, they were nowhere near the Leeds levels that we would have expected of them. Credit to Hull for that, actually. I thought Hull was so good on the ball in particular. They're a very attractive side on the ball, Hull City. But to have seen Ipswich go and win late on, to then rebound in the way that they did, Leeds, who would have been third at the time, and obviously they had their troubles getting out of the championship the last time they were in it, and eventually Bielsa got them up. And you can tell that they don't want to be in that situation again. They'd much rather it be an easy route to the line. Unfortunately, Leeds fans, it's not going to be three very, very classy teams going for two places, and someone's going to miss out. So just get them points on the board, and it means so much. And this weekend, Craig, Ipswich against Norwich, absolutely huge game in the Championship. There's so many of them to come between now and the end of the season. Leeds go to Coventry. It's another very tricky game. So it might be, and you can never take these things for granted, but it might be that Leicester have got the best of it this weekend. They're at home to Birmingham, but Birmingham themselves are fighting for their lives. Got a decent result under Gary Rowett on Easter Monday. They've got something to build on. So plenty more twists and turns at the top of the Championship, mate.
For sure, without a shadow of a doubt. And as I said, you know, it's a there's six, seven games to play for some teams, six for others, obviously. And there will be twists and turns. You know, the Old Farm derby, Norwich against Ipswich. That's going to be one to watch, and that certainly takes my eye, I think, this weekend. Because we, you know, derby games, sometimes form can go out the window, can't it? You know, and certainly be keeping my eye on that one. You mentioned Leicester against Birmingham. Again, Midlands derby, albeit West against East, but a Midlands derby nonetheless. And as you say, Birmingham absolutely fighting for their lives down there, aren't they? And who knows, do they get the new manager bounce, albeit a caretaker manager bounce with Gary Rowett? That remains to be seen. Yeah, so it all bodes exciting weekend again in the Championship.
Certainly does, yep. League will bypass the bottom end of the Championship, because we'll come on to that in a minute when we talk about slightly strange managerial sacking, actually. And we'll move to the top of League Two very quickly, Craig. There is a game going on as we record this podcast. Doncaster are at home to Wrexham. But we know that Stockport County are the new leaders of the division. They won both their games over Easter. They won 3-0 at Forest Green, very comfortably so in that game, and edged out AFC Wimbledon on Easter Monday. They're now top with 77 points. Mansfield's game on Easter Monday was called off for a waterlogged pitch, so they didn't get the chance to answer. And as I speak, Wrexham have just gone behind at Doncaster. So Mansfield and Wrexham went into that Tuesday night, both on 73 points, 4 points behind Stockport County. Wrexham in third, Mansfield in second, and fourth is Milton Keynes Dons, albeit they've played more games than anyone else around them, but they're 2 points behind them. It's looking good for Stockport. Won their last three, and I remember this time last season, they were in a really, really good vein of form at the end of the season. They seem to finish season strongly under Dave Challoner, and from what I've seen, they look like the favourites to me to go on and win the title now.
Yeah, I think they're unbeaten in six now, aren't they? I think certainly they won the last three and drawn the two previous to that, and I think they won the one previous to that as well. So they're in great form at the moment, and of course they're in you know, pole position, and they'll have a game in hand, obviously, on Wrexham as well. But again, you know, the top of that table, like the Championship, it's fascinating, isn't it? You know, there's not many points separating the top four for three automatic promotion places. Obviously, Wrexham's win against Mansfield, that was huge for Wrexham, you know, that 2-0 win. But yeah, all to play for at the top of that division again, and it's another one which is going to be intriguing from now to the end of the season, no doubt.
Certainly is. Just quickly touching on the other end of that division as well, we'd written, or at least I had written, Sutton off when we covered the bottom of the League Two a few weeks ago, but they obviously listened in, Craig, and they took sort of offence to me writing them off, because since then they've won four on the bounce. They've got themselves out of the bottom two completely, albeit they have played more matches than both of the teams that are below them, but they're now outside the relegation zone on 39 points. As I say, having won their last four, but they've played 42 games. Colchester now second from bottom, 1 point behind Sutton, but they've got three games in hand, but they are finding wins incredibly hard to come by, albeit they are drawing a number of them. And Forest Green had a really good win at Crewe on Easter Monday. They're 3 points away from Sutton on 36 points, but they have a game in hand of Sutton, and there's only 4 goals difference in the goal difference. Grimsby are on 40 points, 2 points above the relegation zone, also with a couple of games in hand of Sutton. It's looking like 2 from 4 now. Salford have moved far enough clear. Colchester have got the games in hand, but we've said it so often on this podcast, points on the board, they count for a lot. And Sutton suddenly have put 12 on the board in no time at all, and look like the team to beat down there.
Yeah, incredible run of form by Sutton, Kevin, eh? And Forest Green Rovers as well. You know, they've won a couple since Steve Cottrell's gone in there, because we followed that one, didn't we, a few episodes ago. They had a great win at Crewe, 3-0 win at Crewe over the weekend as well. So they're in a little bit of form, although, having said that, they do lose three on the bounce over a period. But, as you said, Colchester United down in there now, you know, and... yes, they have got three games in hand over Sutton, and they've played 2 games less than Forest Green as well. So, as you said, you know, points in the bag or on the board are more important than games in hand. But they're unbeaten in 4, Colchester. Admittedly, they've drawn 3 of those, but by the same token, you know, that's going to be another one to keep an eye on. I mean, that's fascinating. Again, I think you're right. I think it probably goes as far up as Grimsby. In 21st, which is 4th from bottom. Obviously, 2 go down. Salford in 20th, 47 points. And Swindon above them on 47 points as well. You think that they might be safe and out of it, but like you said, you know, twists and turns to come. 46 games to play. Grimsby have still got 6 to play. Colchester have got 7 to play, so there's plenty more points available for those teams down there. So fascinating. It'd be interesting to see what Sutton do next, whether or not they can maintain that great form. Could they go 5 on the bounce, or at least be unbeaten in 5, keep the pressure on the 2 below them? And I'm also fascinated as well to see what Forest Green can do now that they've got their new manager in as well.
Possibly the hardest task of them all for Sutton at the weekend, though, Craig. They're at home to the leaders, Stockport County. It's an absolute massive game at both ends of the table, that one. Forest Green home to Milton Keynes Dons. Colchester home to Wrexham. Grimsby at home to Newport. So at least if you look at the league placings, Grimsby would look to have the more comfortable fixture of the 4. But yeah, Sutton against Stockport. Wow, what a game at this stage of the season.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, the bottom 3 play against teams in the top 4, so that's going to be a fascinating weekend of games, and be really, really interesting to see whether or not those teams can actually not lose, if you like. Can they pick up a point against the top teams? I think it might be a case of damage limitation this weekend, Kevin, as opposed to going for all out wins, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll keep an eye on that, as we will all the divisions on the Director's Box podcast between now and the middle of May when they all come to an end. But some really exciting conclusions in store, that's for sure. And that's definitely the case, as we've mentioned a few times, Craig, in the Championship, towards the bottom end of the Championship. Seems like there's someone in the bottom 3, a different team in the bottom 3, every single time a round of matches finishes. And that's the case again. It's not the case again. Huddersfield did drop back into there, but at one stage Huddersfield were out. At one stage Birmingham were in the bottom 3 on Easter Monday, but Birmingham ended up finding a kind of late winner and put Huddersfield back in there, who drew against Stoke. But the team who are heading dangerously towards trouble are Plymouth Argyle, and I don't know if panicked is the right word, but they have decided to change their manager. They've sacked Ian Foster after their defeat at home to Bristol City on Easter Monday. And they've put the director of football in charge. I think most people kind of thought Neil Warnock was automatic to take that job on. He lives down there. He's managed them before. He knows all about the club. He's a supposed Championship escape miracle artist. But that's not the case. They put the director of football in charge. But my question to you with regards to Plymouth, Craig, 6 games left from the end of the season. Is it too late to sack a manager, or is there still enough time for them to get the bounce that they're looking for that's going to keep them for a second season in the second tier?
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? With, as I say, especially with only six games to go. But then, if you look at Plymouth's last five games, they've lost four and only drawn one, so they've only taken 1 point from 15. So obviously, that has seen them slide down the table, you know, at a remarkable rate of knots. And as a consequence, the chairman obviously is, acted accordingly. Perhaps, you know, we talk about the new manager bounce. Maybe they're looking for that. Maybe they're hoping for that, or maybe they think that a director of football can do a better job than Ian Foster.
It'll be an interesting one either way. Absolutely huge game for Plymouth Argyle on Friday nights, live on TV. Rotherham versus Plymouth. Rotherham are obviously relegated. If they lose that game, Plymouth are heading dangerously towards the relegation zone if they lose that game. So the Friday night championship action is going to be nervy but pretty exciting, and it will set up a big weekend down at the bottom of the table. Rotherham are actually relegated if they draw that game as well. They're 18 points adrift of Plymouth with 18 points to play for. It will be interesting to see how that whole dynamic plays out, not just on Friday night, but then the following game for Plymouth is against QPR, who actually won both of their games over Easter. They look like they're going to be fine under Marty Sifuentes. He's got them playing some nice football, and actually centre-backs are scoring worldies for them.
Yeah, it was a great strike. I watched the Swansea QPR game live, it was a great strike by Cook, to be honest with you. And yeah, I think, that game could have gone either way. It had 0-0 over it, written all over it for long periods, and then obviously Cook came up with a great strike for the winner. But yeah, it looks like now as if QPR are out of that. They are 5 points, 6 points clear of Huddersfield in that last relegation slot. So you'd think that given the poor form of the teams in the bottom three, trying to claw back a 6 point deficit would be unlikely, shall we say. And then, of course, below QPR, then you've got Blackburn on 45 points, as are Stoke, Millwall on 44, Birmingham, you mentioned, on 42, and Plymouth on 41. So, yeah, Plymouth, you would expect to get something from the Rotherham game. Of course, Rotherham, all but relegated, as you said, if they don't win that game. But they're going to make it as difficult for teams as they possibly can, because, that would be the fighting mentality, I'm sure, with a team that's underperformed this season.
Yeah, that would certainly appear to be the case. They beat Millwall on Easter Monday. Huge result. Great result for Rotherham. That also, good shout out to Blackburn Rovers. Go to the Stadium of Light and beat Sunderland 5-1 in their own backyard, given everything that they've been going through themselves, Blackburn. That was quite a result, and it might be the one that keeps them up. Still going to need a few more, though, Blackburn. I noticed from watching the coverage over the weekend, they still have to play three of the top four, Blackburn, so they're not safe yet. But yeah, huge game coming up on Friday, and it'll be interesting to see if Plymouth have made the right decision to pull the trigger with the manager or not, and also the right decision to put the director of football in charge and not Neil Warnock. We'll follow that one between now and the rest of the season as well. Let's move slightly away from on-pitch stuff now, Craig, because an awful lot of clubs are coming out at the moment and doing something that me as a football fan, I don't like, and I'm sure you'll be the same, and that is dropping concession prices for OAPs for season tickets. Now, I should stress this is Premier League clubs that are doing this, not EFL clubs, and that makes it worse for me because Premier League clubs have all the money that you could possibly dream of coming through their TV broadcast deal, so they really don't need to do this. The latest one to come out and do it, Tottenham Hotspur. I was at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Saturday, which I must admit is a work of art of a football ground. And the Tottenham fans turned their backs on the pitch after 65 minutes in protest of what their board are doing here. Basically, they're taking away the concession sort of deduction, and anyone over 65, if they want a season ticket in future, they have to pay an adult season ticket price, or the ticket will basically go to a match day ticket, whereby someone from potentially overseas will come in, a tourist will take the ticket. They'll pay the home fee, which is an awful lot more than it would be if you work it out over a season ticket. And of course, they'll spend a lot of money in the club shop. So I understand the business point of view of this. But a man or a woman who has been a Tottenham fan or a fan of any of these clubs that are doing this suddenly, for however long they'll have been a fan for, I mean, yeah, you know, most concession prices start at 65, so you're probably looking at a 50-year loyalty. Surely that deserves more than just to be treated in this way, Craig.
I think it's absolutely disgraceful, Kevin, quite frankly. You know, with the amount of money that's in the game these days, you know, you'd have to question, you know, the thinking behind this. You've already mentioned the loyalty of the fans. You know, if you're an old age pensioner, then you probably have been supporting that team for many, many years. And the fact that, you know, they now want to phase out concession prices for OAPs particularly shows a lack of respect socially. I think you're not taking into consideration potential loyalty of that particular demographic group. And then finally, of course, you know, doing all this in the midst of a cost of living crisis, you know, it just beggars belief, really. And, you know, I'd like to see what the rationale is for Spurs, particularly on thinking this way.
Yeah, I mean, I always say nothing surprises me in football, but I must admit this one did. The fans are the ones that you know, your loyal fans as well. I mean, the atmosphere at Tottenham on Saturday wasn't the best I've experienced this season, but it wasn't the worst either. But I think if you take away those loyal fans, the ones who know all the songs and everything else, the atmosphere is just going to die a little bit. And that in itself will affect things on the pitch anyway. Players are obviously going to be more responsive and more energetic when there's an atmosphere to play in front of, rather than sort of a friendly situation where, you know, it's just basic murmurs in the crowd and no sort of noise or energy to lift the player. So it'll have an impact on them on the pitch. But you're absolutely right. You know, to the disrespect, first and foremost, but the timing of it as well. I mean, the Premier League have just announced a new TV deal, huge, huge broadcast deal that's going to net even more money than what they've possibly had. I actually think ticket prices should be going down in the Premier League. And I don't just say that as a ticket holder of a Premier League club. I just think you don't need to get your income through ticket prices. You can offer prices that are fair to supporters. And chances are, if you offer fair prices to get into the ground, you'll make the difference up by what people spend on food and drink inside the ground anyway. Not necessarily old age pensioners, but certainly across the board. I just think this is so wrong, and I'm glad that the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust are fighting this for their old age pensioners, because we just, as football fans, we just cannot let this happen without a fight. You know, we need to stand up for ourselves at times. No one else really is going to stand up for us, so we need to do it ourselves. So huge kudos to the Tottenham Hotspur fans for turning their back on the game on 65 minutes on Saturday. Fans should stick together in this one, Craig.
Absolutely. You know, if you look at the German model, for example, in the Bundesliga, you know, a lot of the clubs there, if not all the clubs, sort of have a 51% fan ownership model, if you like. And as a consequence of that, ticket prices are kept really, really low. I think I read somewhere that they're like sort of €15 to get in at Bayern Munich, for example. So what's probably about £12-13. You know, they have been successful in Europe, and they compete on the Champions League stage. You know, if it can work in one country, clearly they have, you know, they get the revenue from sponsorship and television rights as well. So if it can work in Germany, and German clubs can look after their fans and reduced cost of refreshments, you know, beer, for example, if it can work in Germany, why can't it work in England, in the Premier League? But it just boils down to me, you know, you mentioned about, you know, it having an effect, you know, with fans and singing and all the rest of it. I just think it's almost a social embarrassment, really, you know, and surely football clubs need to take some social responsibility. And after you would think, valued and treasured supporters who are old age pensioners would be, you know, very, very close, if not at the top of that list.
I mean, if they're not, they absolutely should be. You're right, just on loyalty grounds alone, really, really, really poor from Tottenham. And any other club in the Premier League is doing this. And I would say, if it was my club as well, I would voice the exact same opinion. Not good, not good. Hope there's a rethink there. Whilst we're on supporters and tickets and things like that, Craig, Let me just sort of bring up this week's poll. It's on the Director's Box app. There's one currently. If your club offered, would you consider buying an away season ticket? I am in a kind of privileged position, Craig, that my club does this. It had to when we were in the National League. Luton were going to places where the away ends just weren't big enough for capacity of the Luton fans that wanted to go. It's exactly the same now in the Premier League as well. Supply is nowhere near as strong as demand. So Luton do offer an away season ticket. I am an away season ticket holder at Luton. It basically means I pay a surcharge at the start of each season and it gets me above, you know, the rest of the sort of field, so to speak, and guarantees me a ticket to every away game. It's obviously capped at a certain number so that there are still tickets to go on sale to people who don't have an away season ticket, but it just helps me out so much. I'm someone who is in a fortunate, privileged position that I'm self-employed. I can go to every Luton game. It's basically what I do. So it has suited me. This is an idea that I think is a very, very good idea. The most loyal supporters, if they can get a head start in getting their ticket to an away game, particularly if it's a huge away game, you know, a derby game, for example, or maybe even a cup game against a lower league side. If you go to all of the away games, but you can't get a ticket if you're on holiday or something when the tickets go on sale. I just think that an away season ticket's a really good idea. It works so well at Luton. I'm definitely for it. It'd be interesting to see if everyone else out there is. Not every club does offer this. But if your club does offer it, would you accept it? Get your votes in on the poll. You've got nearly 2 weeks for that one. You've got options of yes, as I mainly go to away games. Yes, as I go to home and away games. No, as I don't travel to away games. Or no, as I don't attend many live games. And maybe if the result of that one is strongly in demand of an away season ticket, clubs will pick up on that through the Director's Box podcast and they might start offering an away season ticket. Good idea for you, Craig?
Yeah, I think so, Kevin. I think Swansea City did a similar initiative a few years back where they sold away season tickets. And of course, you know, it's a lot of supporters, you know, for whatever reason, through work or marriage or whatever it might be, actually don't live in the vicinity of their favourite team. You know, a team which they supported from home. You know, classic example of myself, I suppose. You know, supporting Swansea City and then not being able to have a season ticket any longer because, you know, I've worked abroad or I've worked in other areas of the UK. By having an away season ticket, obviously, if I'm a London-based Swansea supporter, then, you know, maybe having an away season ticket would benefit me because obviously then I can go and watch all the London games. I can get a train up to Birmingham, for example, Liverpool, Manchester. So, you know, it might suit me to have an away season ticket if I can't attend as many home games as I would like.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just another option to get more supporters going to games, and that can never be a bad thing. So we're definitely in the four camp for an away season ticket. I'm not really sure that there is too many negatives, actually. I don't know why more clubs don't offer it. Hopefully that will change and they do offer it, particularly if subscribers to the Director's Box app vote for that and it picks up enough traction to get clubs to notice it. That's England covered, Craig, but we'll finish off this episode of the podcast in Scotland, where we have kind of hinted at this huge, huge game in the Scottish Premiership at the weekend, Sunday at noon UK time. So right smack bang in the middle of the day, we've got the top two meeting, haven't we? Celtic currently leading the way, take on Rangers. Obviously, there's no away fans at the Old Firm games this season. That's changing from next season, and I'm glad to hear that because I think atmospheres are much better when there's away fans as well as home fans. Obviously, my own club banned away fans back in the 80s, so I know where I'm coming from there. Huge game, though, Craig. Obviously, Rangers got a game in hand. They're a point behind Celtic. So does that make this a bigger game for Celtic, even though it's at Ibrox, or is it just huge for both teams?
I think it's just huge for both games, for both teams, I think, Kevin. Old Firm games are just that anyway, aren't they? You know, just by nature of the two teams involved. I was lucky enough to attend a Rangers Celtic Old Firm game with my eldest son James some years ago, and there were some Celtic fans in attendance for that. I think that not many though. I think there's probably only about 500 Celtic fans, if that. down in the bottom corner. We were behind the goal in the upper tier, and the atmosphere was unbelievable. I must say, it was. You can see why this, you know, it's stated as one of the key derby games in world football, not just British football. Fascinating, isn't it? You know, it's gone one way then the other. Celtic, as you say, a point clear at the moment, but Rangers, of course, have got a game in hand. So both teams in similar form. They've won four of their last five. Both had blips, recent blips as well, losing games recently. So yeah, this one is going to be. I've got games at the weekend, but if I can get anywhere near a TV screen which is showing this one, then I'll definitely be watching.
Yeah, huge game of football. Celtic have won both the games against each other so far this season. They're obviously looking for the treble or the hat trick this season. Rangers looking to deny them. And if Rangers do deny them, they'll go back to the top of the table. They'll have that game in hand. And we're closing in on that point in the Scottish Premiership season where the split takes place. There was a really funny incident in the Rangers game over Easter, Craig. They were playing against Hibernian. The Hibernian player took a quick free kick and he spanked it right into the back of his teammate's head. And it rebounded right back into the face of another one of his teammates. And they both went down. And it was just the geezer who took the free kick. He didn't know whether to stand there and apologise or laugh. It just he knocked them both out. It was like a coconut shy. And I saw it on social media. It just had me kind of laughing. The poor fellow, he didn't really know what to do with himself.
I'm sure he was popping in the dressing room afterwards then, Kevin, wasn't he? But I didn't see that event, actually. But now you mentioned it, I'll see if I can have a look for it online.
Yeah, it went viral over the weekend. It was just so funny. I mean, he absolutely wellied this free kick sort of on the edge of his box up to his striker, but he didn't get nowhere near enough loft on it. And caught the first bloke around the back of the head. And like I say, both sets of physios treated the two players that were down, and always good at the end of it. So that's why I make a laugh and a joke of it. Obviously, had it been more serious, we'd have taken it more seriously. A huge, huge game at the top of the Scottish Premier League on Sunday lunchtime. That's the kind of main event ahead of the sort of supper that is Manchester United against Liverpool. And we'll reflect on all of the games that we've spoken about and plenty more in next week's podcast, because that's just about it for this one, Craig. It is Luton against Bournemouth for me on Saturday. Absolutely huge game in Luton's battle to beat the drop. How's your weekend looking? You just said there that you've got a few games. Are you jet setting across America?
Not jet setting, Kevin. I've got a 6-hour drive down to St. Louis from Milwaukee. So I'm taking two teams down there, our under-15s and under-18 boys. So we get down there Friday night, and then both teams play Saturday morning and then Saturday evening, and then again then on Sunday morning. So they've got three games in 2 days, which is what they do here, obviously to get value out of the travel. So I've got six games in less than just over 24 hours. So it's going to be a busy, but interesting and no doubt enjoyable weekend for me.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with that. Hope that the weekend goes well. And we'll be back next week to talk plenty more football.
Thanks, Kevin, and to you as well. Enjoy the game at Arsenal. And that's coming up this midweek, obviously. And enjoy your game at the weekend as well. And I hope everybody else does who's tuned into this podcast. And I look forward to the next podcast next week.
Yep, if you're going to a football match this weekend, enjoy it, be respectful as always, and make sure you head back where you've picked up this podcast next week for what will be episode 9 of the podcast. Thanks very much for listening, and until next week, goodbye.